And it's Ari Rosenbaum here with another episode of that 401k podcast. This week's episode, 2021 challenges for 401k plan providers. First things first, of course, our events. On Thursday, November 19th, we are going to have that 401k virtual conference with Cheryl Hickerson, who is the CEO of Females in Finance, which is a really great organization dealing with, helping out female financial advisors. They have a male ally network that I'm a part of. So it's a great, great little organization to help female advisors out in what is certainly a male-dominated business. I'm all for diversity. It will be a great conversation with Cheryl. She'll be a part of that 401k National Virtual Conference in January, which we'll just talk about in about a minute. That's November 19th. On November 20th, it's that 401k Virtual Conference Ocho, number 8. That's on Friday, November 20th. We'll talk about number 9 once I schedule it. And of course, as discussed, that 401k National Virtual Conference, January 21, January 22, 2021, right after the inauguration of whoever that may be as we record this. It may be a few days or a few weeks before we finally understand as to who won this damn thing, as Bob Murphy once said, and the Mets win the damn ball game. I think it was a 10-9 game against the Philadelphia Phillies many years ago. But we will have a lot of great presenters, 401k Jake, Pension Assurance, Matrix through NFI 360. So I believe there's going to be an opportunity for people who have certification through FI 360 to get credit for the presentation that they'll be offering. I'll be there, of course. Granite Group, PCS, Nationwide, Mass Mutual, a whole bunch of others. And of course, more importantly, I wouldn't say more importantly, but if you're the sports fanatic that I am, first day's guest is Walt Clyde Frazier. Everybody knows him from New York Knicks broadcaster, but more importantly, he is a New York Knicks legend, Hall of Famer, NBA Hall of Fame, Springfield, Mass. Number retired, number 10 by the Knicks. What really made Walt, obviously famous, two NBA championships in 70 and 73. If you look at that game 7 in 70, everybody remembers Willis coming off, making the first two shots, hobbling on the court after his injury in game 5. But Walt had the game of his life and got the Knicks to win game 7. Friday, day 2 guest is Dwight Gooden, New York Mets legend. Somebody I always jokingly say I see him more than I see most of my relatives. Of course, he's a lot more successful. Met and of course Yankee great threw a no hitter for the Yankees back in '96. Won a couple of World Series with them. Obviously '86 with the Mets. 1985 Cy Young Award winner. 1984 Rookie of the Year. He was the very first guest of the very first 401k conference 2.5 years ago at Citi Field. Of course. So let's talk about today's topic. When I thought about it originally a couple days ago, the idea was I talk about the election and what's going to happen. Are we going to get a fiduciary rule? Is that ESG rule going to still be in place? And the problem is as it stands right now, I went to sleep. I'm recording this on Wednesday. I went to sleep on Tuesday night thinking Trump won. I wake up next morning, look at the numbers and think maybe Biden will win. So we'll see what happens. What's interesting is that regardless, you're still going to have, either party is still going to have some control of one legislative branch. So it'll be interesting to see what happens, with Biden winning, let's say, and the Senate probably retained in Republican hands. There's only so much leeway that Biden can have in terms of tax proposals and effects on the 401k plans. I know people are upset with kind of a phase out of the 401k deferrals and in turn into a 401k tax credit. You know, if Biden wins, I don't think that's going to happen, namely because it looks more likely than not now that you will have a Republican Congress, even if, you know, you have that Kelly Loeffler runoff in Georgia for that seat in January, still think you have a Republican Senate. So we're not going to talk about the election, which is always good. Politics, always, two things never to talk about, politics and religion. But anyway, let's look at some of the challenges that are going on for 401k plan providers. You know, listen, 2020 feels like a really bad disaster movie that just doesn't want to end. Like, you know, when time ran out or swarm, as I've mentioned in previous podcasts and previous articles. But number one, one of the challenges are you're going to see further consolidation in this 401k plan business. And we've seen that since 2012, since the fee disclosure regulation. I mean, it just made sense that, you know, when requiring plan providers to fully disclose all fees, it made sense that a lot of the big insurance company providers decided, you know what, this is time for me to cash out. See ya. You know, it's kind of like the George Costanza, always want to leave it on a high note. And there were a lot of plan providers over the last 8 years that wanted to leave it on a high note and leave their business. You know, Hartford, MassMutual now, you know, just fairly recently. You know, just people think that this is a time to cash in. And you see it with, you know, TPAs. You know, we have a census being really on the prowl and buying some really well-known TPA shops. You know, it's an interesting business because, you know, a lot of the owners of these, you know, small to medium-sized TPAs are older in years. And, you know, this may be an opportunity for them to cash out. You know, some want to have an exit strategy. Some want to be part of something bigger. There's a whole host of reasons why people, you know, sell. You know, being on Long Island, I've seen over the years, you know, the selling of TPA shops, the selling of RIA firms. There's always so many different reasons as to why people do it, but it's a continuing process in the retirement plan business, and it will further to continue to be a thing as long as people, you know, larger plan providers have the check writing ability or the loan ability to purchase other plan providers, as long as this is a successful business. It will continue to happen. But, you know, if you're a small provider, it's not the end of the world because, you know, there's always going to be a niche in this business that you can fill. There is no plan provider out there that can really work on all plans. You know, when we look at the 900-pound gorillas in the room or the 800-pound gorillas in the room, we look at some of these larger plan providers, they're not going to offer services to these small plans. There's no money in it, in their minds. It's, you know, when you're publicly traded or when you're larger, you have different needs and requirements than you do if you're a small shop that's, you know, privately owned by, you know, an individual or a family. You're not going to want to take, you know, a larger plan provider may not want to be in the PEP business because they see that, you know, there may be issues in pricing. So there's enough of a niche for anyone to succeed in this business. It's just the, you know, it's like life, finding exactly where your, you know, goal or place in life is. And that's the way it is in business. So, I mean, you know, consolidation is a way of life. There's enough room in the business to succeed. You know, the only, you know, negative part of consolidation is people losing their jobs. You know, I just heard of a transaction that finally closed, and hearing, you know, a couple wonderful people lose their jobs. You know, I had a buddy of mine who was, you know, part of a mutual fund company bought by another one, and he succeeded to get to the other entity and have a job. But, you know, other people aren't so lucky. When you have mergers, and there's always a elimination of positions that they find redundant. So that means that people lose their jobs. And, you know, if you're a plan provider looking to hire some good people, maybe now is the time to hire them. You know, if there are better people out there in the marketplace. Just had a buddy of mine who moved to Indiana for a position, and his company let him go. I mean, he's a wonderful plan administrator, 2 years move from New York to Indiana, and then, you know, you find out you lose your job. It's a very tough market, and it's a very tough time. And, you know, if you are a plan provider and you want to hire good people, because hiring good people is difficult in the 401k plan business. I know that from experience. Maybe this is a good time to find some good quality candidates. The problem is, you know, you have a lot of experienced candidates, but not a lot of wonderful, terrific candidates. Next on the list, COVID is still a thing, you know, and I was coming back from Disney World, from that 401k National Conference. The world felt like it was coming to an end. The NBA suspended their season, and it really appeared that this coronavirus was going to be a very, very big thing. And I thought that, you know, it would be 2 weeks, 4 weeks, 6 weeks tops. And now here we are, 8 months later, and it's still a problem. Numbers spiking everywhere. New York, you know, our numbers are spiking, to May levels, maybe, it looks like, in some areas. And so, while New York seems to be out of it right now, we can go back into a lockdown. There are several areas in New York City that are in a lockdown because of their neighborhoods or clusters for high incidences of COVID. So these closures of businesses, which are going on erratically around the country, depending on the area, negatively impacts business and negatively impacts the business of our clients. So the issues of partial terminations and planned terminations are continuing. You know, New York City, for example, they opened up restaurants not too long ago. When in Long Island, they did in July, and restaurants have a 25% capacity in New York City for in-person dining. And so, therefore, they're still struggling, and they're still hurting. So a lot of the issues that we've seen over the last 8 months will continue. Losing clients because they're going out of business. Issues dealing with paying people out. Is there going to be, depending on who the president's going to be, are we going to get more COVID relief? Is that COVID relief going to pertain to retirement plans again? Are we going to have more COVID distributions, more COVID loans? We'll see what happens. But it's something really important to consider. And with COVID, eventually we're going to have a vaccine. Whether it's going to be December or early next year or by the end of 2021, a vaccine is going to happen. And most of us who like vaccines, like yours truly, COVID is going to go by in terms of high incidence of infection, in terms of mortality rates. It will go away. And obviously the virus will be mutating and it'll probably be weaker over time. Hopefully it seems to be weaker over time in terms of deaths, but regardless, we're going to see, permanent effects on this industry because of COVID. Now you look at, it's not the same thing, but September 11th, 2001, it always reminds me of one of the worst days of my life that didn't affect a family member. And, you know, it's going to be in September, it's going to be 20 years later. And let's look at the dramatic effects that, you know, September 11th still affects us to this day. You know, you notice that every time you go on a plane. You notice that when you want to mail something, the limits on mailing, the security at, you know, all different spots. This nation changed forever. And we still see the lingering effects of that every day. And we'll see that with COVID. It'll be a little bit different. You know, I think that, you know, some of it's going to be positive. I really believe that, you know, the industry learned that Zoom and Google Meets and Microsoft Teams, whatever you guys are using, is a great avenue. You know, when I had to postpone my 401k conference events, you know, I bought a Zoom subscription. And, you know, the first virtual conference, we had a couple hundred people attend. That was fantastic. And so we were able to adapt and do these in-person conferences virtually. And I believe that, I believe that you're going to have lingering effects. So, you know, with Zoom, you know, you'll see, you know, I think the effects of it is a lot of these national events, national conferences, You're going to see less attendance at these events. You're going to see more virtual events. In terms of enrollment meetings and just regular meetings, you know, TPAs and financial advisors are going to lean on Zoom. It's more cost efficient to have somebody on a Zoom call to do an enrollment meeting or an education meeting than it is to send a representative, you know, if it's outside of the area, you know, on a plane and spending all these thousands of dollars and the time from the office. And, you know, time from the office is that money item that, you know, plan providers forget. You know, when you're on a plane, you could, you know, you're not as, you're not working as hard or you're not as productive as you are when you're in the office. So I think that really you're going to see a cutback in a lot of live enrollment meetings in person, a cutback in a lot of live national events. I mean, local events are different. People don't have to travel by plane. You know, I think those are going to be less affected than some of the larger national events. Next, obviously, for 2021 challenges, pooled employer plans. We can talk about this subject until the end of time because I find it to be a fascinating subject because, you know, a lot of people are really giddy about it. And I always, you know, I like to see the things, you know, look to see both sides. I'm not going to be one of those TPAs that say, you know what, PEPs, forget it. I'm not going to do it. I'm very cautious about PEPs. The reason I'm cautious about PEPs is because we've seen this before with multiple employer plans, open multiple employer plans. And a PEP is essentially an open MEP with a fiduciary solution because the open MEP was not very clear as to fiduciary responsibilities of adopting employers in terms of how ERISA sees it and how the Internal Revenue Code may see it. And pooled employer plans has that pooled plan provider, that fiduciary function of dealing with the plan administration, that 316 kind of, you know, position. It's, you know, it's an interesting solution. Obviously, you also have that audit exception, which is far better than an open MEP. It's 1,000 participants or, you know, no employer more than 100 participants. As opposed to the open MEP, which, you know, you need an audit as soon as you have 100 heads. You know, the problem with PEPs is the same problem with open MEPs. Can these plans achieve a size of critical mass? Can they? Can they, you know, do what's necessary in order to achieve success? Achieving success, meaning being cost effective. Now, my opinion is, unless you had a PEP right off the bat with like $100 million of assets, you cannot, as a plan provider in good conscience, advertise cost savings that you cannot deliver. That's why pushing the fiduciary solution for plan providers, for plan sponsors to join a PEP, I think that's a better argument because that's something that's substantive and that's something that's accurate. You know, the most successful PEPs are going to be MEPs that converted over to a PEP. You know, you could maybe offer a PEP for solo 401k plan owners or people who have simple IRAs or SEPs and kind of offer a solution because, you know, quite honestly, most of those people, you know, just go to the local Fidelity or Schwab office, open up a plan and get absolutely no guidance and no help. That they could get with a type of PEP solution. And, you know, the problem for a lot of plan providers that don't want to offer it is, you know, a lot of them are pricing plans on a wing and a prayer. They're hoping that the assets will achieve a size of critical mass. And, you know, there are quite a bit of plan providers out there who got burned on open MEPs. You know, I had an open MEP about, you know, 8 years ago, and that flopped. You know, people... you know, might price it a little too better than it needs to be, and they cannibalize their single employer plan business by offering this PEP solution that undercuts them in terms of their single employer pricing. So, you know, are PEPs a niche business? Yes. There are plan providers who are already in the MEP business and do a very good job of it. They're going to be successful in the PEP business. So, you know, as a plan provider, I'm not telling you you shouldn't do the PEP business, but you actually could consider how much business you could generate. Not everybody is going to have enough business to support a PEP of their own. So if you are an RIA and you want to kind of white label solution, maybe look into joining a mega PEP that would allow you to pick a fund lineup, but be a part of something bigger that you could position your clients, the smaller clients, into. Because, you know, not everybody has the business to, you know, make a PEP successful. You know, there are, you know, RIA firms with multiple offices around the country that, you know, could be very successful because they have. And that's what really is going to make a PEP successful or not, having a solution and having a distribution in order for people to sell that product. Last but not least, and this is, again, a commercial for me, you know, concerns and issues. Well, why don't you attend or sponsor that 401k National Virtual Conference? That'll be January 21, 22, 2021. Again, signing up. We are changing that early bird come Thanksgiving. $20.21 to join up. You know, a lot of great guests. Again, Walt Frazier, Doc Gooden, great presentations that you will enjoy over a two-day period. Sherry Fitz will be there. I feel like that Chips disco scene. If you ever do that, Google that on YouTube. I saw that recently. Or guy announces all the celebrities at the Chips roller disco bash to raise money, and it was just very, very funny. But yeah, I mean, a lot of good providers out there. PCS, Granite Group, a whole bunch of people, Matrix, FI360. So go to that 401ksite.com for further information about the event. If you want to sponsor the event, again, you know, I wanted to do another national conference. I did the last one at Disney World. I was going to do one at Disneyland. Never got around to plotting one because Disneyland to this day is still closed ever since March. And so therefore, you know, let's move the event to January and let's do it all virtual. And if we're going to do it all virtual, we don't have to worry about catering. We don't have to deal with room reservations. So let's pass on that savings to the attendees and to the plan sponsors. So for attendees, for as little as $20.21, you could be a part of it. You want autographs from Walt Frazier and Dwight Gooden, you'll pay extra. You want a t-shirt, you'll pay extra for that. Sign up before Thanksgiving. That's when the prices are going to increase. And if you want to sponsor it, you know, the days of spending five figures on a conference, that's not going to happen here. You want to speak 30 minutes, $1,500. You want to speak for an hour, 50 minutes, $2,500. You can't do a virtual exhibit room, so don't worry about that. Going to be a great event for everybody. So whether you're, you know, TPA, auditor, financial advisor, broker, even an ERISA attorney, it's a fantastic event, and I hope you're going to be a part of it. And that really concludes this episode of that 401k podcast. Ari Rosenbaum, so long.